Music matters. No. Music matters. That's worse. Music matters. Welcome to Music Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Williams Birch, and today we're talking all about copyright and rights and streaming, and really, this is your primer course, your remediation or review from the 1 or 2 days you might have had in Choral Methods on copyright. Rest assured, not to worry, copyright is always changing, and as you'll find out in this episode, it is usually changing a little bit slower than it needs to be, but we'll get into that. Today, I'm bringing a dear friend, fellow church member, Savannian lawyer, music lover, art history buff. He played French horn as a child. Lawyer Mills Fleming is joining today. There's a couple really cool things about this episode. One, Mills is the self-proclaimed Ernest Hemingway of law, and you will hear as he tells the stories and unfolds these terms, it makes so much sense. So I hope you enjoy the conversations that he brings to the table with his storytelling-esque ability. He also is a massive fan of music, and he's really invested in the musical programs here in Savannah. So part of this interview, you'll hear that his love for what we do as teachers and choir people and musicians, he wants us to continue in a forward momentum, and stick around to the very end and hear the little nugget of wisdom he shares before tuning out. It was so motivating, but the conversation was fun. I asked him a bunch of the vocabulary terms that we need to know as we move forward navigating through copyright, and then I asked some of your questions that you sent to me on Facebook when I posed the question about what you need to know. So I hope you enjoy this. It's a little mix of some things I need to know again, some things you asked, and a whole bunch of fun talking with my friend, Mills Fleming, about what in the world is copyright. One more thing before we get to Mills. This episode was recorded face to face. I mean, we kept our social distance, but we met at one of the conference tables at Mills Law Firm to have the conversation. And as I'm learning the ropes of mic setup and recording devices, I want to apologize that this isn't the best audio so far, but thank you in advance for your patience as you hear some big trucks go down the streets of Savannah and a couple accidental bangs on the table while we're talking. Just know the content is worth it, and I appreciate you hanging on and listening. All right, now to the real stuff. Mills and copyright. Welcome to Music Matters Podcast. This is my friend, Mills Fleming, lawyer extraordinaire, among other things.
Thank you.
Music lover.
I played the French horn when I was a kid.
Oh, I didn't know that. Maybe I didn't. I don't think I knew that.
And French sang horn. In the choir, too.
Well, I'm not surprised you sang in the choir. You also take amazing photographs.
Thank you.
And what did you describe yourself? The lawyer,
I am the Ernest Hemingway of law.
I think that's perfect, and the perfect person for today. So today, the goal of our conversation is to provide kind of a primer course or a refresher course mm-hmm. for all of us choral people out there that are just not really remembering the 1 or 2 days we had in our methods classes
sure.
on what is copyright. So we'll ask some questions about definitions of jargon. I'll give you some scenarios. But I think you have to say some type of preface before we get rolling.
Yes. As a lawyer, I have to say that what I'm going to say here is really for information only. This is not legal advice.
Okay.
So if you have a legal question, consult your own lawyer. You should not rely on anything that I'm saying. Just simply take it as information.
Perfect. And that's exactly what we are out to do. We are looking for what are these terms? What are the things? So let's start right off the bat. What's a copyright law?
So a copyright is a way for somebody to protect something that they have written under the law.
Okay.
And it protects that thing from being copied without their consent, as a general rule.
When did it start? When did copyright
Believe it
start?
Or not, it started with the U.S. Constitution.
Really?
It's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8 of the U.S. Constitution. So it is a constitutional right.
To have copyright.
To have copyright. If you follow the progression of the law, there was a Copyright Act passed in 1831, then there was another one passed in 1909, then another one in 1976, and then there were some modifications in 95 and then in 98. So it's a, and the history of copyright has really followed the progression of the medium that it is used in. So whether it's recordings. So for example, they didn't have recordings in the 1700s.
Right.
And in fact, they just sort of started having them in the late 1800s, early 1900s.
That part I do know all about the beginning of cylinders and records.
Yes.
That part I can do a
and
whole lecture.
And it was a very famous U.S. Supreme Court decision where, and it came out in 1908, that prompted the law to change in 1909. So that is what caused that new copyright law to be enacted in 1909. And again, as you sort of follow the progression of music, the industry, how things can be displayed, written, produced, recorded, it all follows technology. So technology is way ahead of the law.
That's what I was about to say. So do you think that in the next few years we're going to see some big changes in the law with the new digital?
We could. We're seeing a lot of that right now with YouTube.
Okay.
Because YouTube is still constrained by the law that was in effect really from 1976. Again, there have been a couple of modifications in 1995 and 1998, but now YouTube is challenging a lot of those basic premises of protecting works that were clearly identifiable to an artist, mm-hmm. but which people are now using for... maybe it's a recital, you know, maybe it's their child playing a piano piece and then they adapt it to a video recording that then goes public and it gets 5 million views.
Right.
So you have issues of public use, you have issues of fair use, you know, all these concepts come into play. And what I tell people with copyright is you always have to start with the assumption that whatever is written enjoys a copyright.
Okay.
And from that bubble, do you have an exception that applies that allows you to use it in some capacity?
Okay.
So whether it's a public performance of something, and is that performance for profit or is it for not for profit? Mm-hmm. You know, is it a recital? Is it a school play? So anytime a school, for example, produces Les Mis, they have to get a copyright in, or not a copyright, but permission to use that in order to produce that. Right, it is copyrighted. So.
That's part of the licensing laws and procedures that go into it? Like a copyright is something that you have, and then for us to have access to it because it's copyrighted, we then have to have licenses?
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah. And so generally speaking, and I think what makes it a little confusing is all of this is so available. I could download Les Mis. I could download an Earth, Wind, and Fire song.
Good band.
I could do all of that and use it in any capacity. I could get the sheet music if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember back before the internet, you would have to write somebody to get that sheet music. And you'd have to pay them for that. Well, now it's all available online.
I think that's one of the questions that's coming later. So is there a difference between rights versus royalties?
There is. So the rights are the person who owns that thing, that work of art or that work of music. The royalty is the money that they receive from you in order to use that document or that writing.
Okay.
So the royalty is the money part of it.
Okay. So could copyright and rights kind of be synonymous?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And it's interesting, and I think your audience would be interested too, in a case that recently came down from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is in California, involving Stairway to Heaven.
Oh.
It was a very famous lawsuit that started back in 2014, and the argument was this gentleman who wrote this song called Taurus claimed that the opening guitar chords of Stairway to Heaven came from his song.
Okay.
So this case was in litigation for a couple of years. Ultimately, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant won the case, and the court just recently affirmed that.
Okay.
But it goes to show it wasn't the entire song of Stairway to Heaven that was in play. It was just that opening chord that everybody knows.
Uh-huh.
And this guy said that he wrote it, and he was entitled to royalties because they used it without his permission.
So really, it's a permission thing.
It is a permission thing.
I was telling you, there was a Facebook Live webinar thing yesterday, mm-hmm. and they really focused on the process to get from picking your repertoire to having a virtual performance.
Right.
And I'll link that in these episode mm-hmm. notes for everyone. But if I was coming to you as a choir person and just saying, hey, what are my steps? If I'm looking to either disseminate out scores to my students virtually through like an email, or I want to eventually have some type of click track and make a virtual choir, what are the steps that you would recommend we go through?
So you start with the premise that whatever I'm about to make a copy of, I can't do. You start with that premise.
Start with whatever I'm about to make a copy of, I cannot. Okay, that's
right.
Huge.
That is huge. And then you ask yourself, is what I'm about to do somehow allowed under the law?
So, for example, if it's public domain.
If it's public domain, then yes.
Oh, someone asked a question about that. Is there a certain amount of time that elapses before something becomes public domain?
There is. So generally, this is under the Copyright Act of 1976, the length that the copyright exists is the age of the author plus 70 years. So when the author dies,
and then you add
you add 70 years to that.
And then it becomes public domain.
Unless somebody has done something to continue to preserve that.
Okay.
Now, some of this, obviously, things generally between 1923 are considered to be in the public domain. So, like a work by Beethoven.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the work by Beethoven may be fine in the public domain, but the sheet music may not be. The sheet music might have a separate copyright on it.
Like if we're using a certain score or
exactly.
a certain publisher's score.
Exactly.
So if it's in public domain and I use the copy in public domain.
Right.
As long as it doesn't have some type of publisher marking on it.
Right.
Okay.
But if somebody has taken that and reduced it to writing, then they may own that writing.
Mm.
Okay. So you've got to make sure you've got the copyright to that to use that.
Mm-hmm.
There's another doctrine called the fair use doctrine.
Okay.
So there are a host, or the home use doctrine. There are a bunch of normal exceptions that would just be common sense.
Normal exceptions. I feel like that needs some air quotes. Okay.
It does, probably. But again, some of this is common sense, but you have to start with the premise that whatever is written down is owned by somebody, and I don't have a right to use it unless there's an exception.
And who do they then talk to get the right to use it?
So generally, there are two main entities, ASCAP and BMI,
okay.
that own the vast majority of works out there.
Oh, wasn't that the Peloton case? Where the Peloton Cycling Studio, I think I read about that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are familiar acronyms.
Right.
They couldn't get the rights to all the songs they wanted
right.
by having all those different...
Right.
What are those acronyms?
ASCAP and BMI.
Yeah, they're like...
And then there's CCLI for the religious
that's
world.
That's right. That's the... But they... Are they like... Are they blanket organizations?
They can be blanket organizations. Like CCLI is used in the religious world. I think their catalog is roughly 450,000 hymns and songs that are
mm-hmm.
religion-based. And when you buy a song from them, because of the breadth of their license, it gives you a lot of opportunities to use that song, whether it's recording a church service and posting it somewhere
right.
or using it for your fundraiser. I mean, you have to check what the scope of the license is.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that makes CCLI so appealing is their license is so broad
mm-hmm.
and it gives you a lot of rights underneath that. Now, the question is, how much do you have to pay for that license?
Right.
And that's just the negotiated point. But I'll give you another example. Many years ago, I was working for a large institution, and they would pipe in music over the loudspeaker.
Mm.
And we got a call from BMI saying, you can't do that without paying us a license. And they also said it applied because we had televisions in people's rooms.
Wow.
This was a healthcare facility, by the way.
Okay.
So the fact that we were running television shows in the rooms, they said we had to pay them a license. We said we didn't, but they said we did.
Okay.
So again, you have to start with the assumption that whatever is written or being broadcast is owned by somebody, and you don't have a right to use it unless either there's a license or an exception.
Okay, so finding those licenses and exceptions. So if this is, there's a teacher listening with hardly any budget,
right?
The recommendation would be go to those things that are open source, like a public domain,
right?
And go there because that's free.
Right.
If you have a little bit of money in your budget, you can get one of these overarching licenses,
right?
But you're kind of in a hole for what's covered in their license.
Right.
And then we can reach out to publishers and composers. It's still kind of iffy.
Right. Right.
Okay, so I'm feeling like we have some hope here, which is better than I felt last week.
There is hope. But think about it, too, from the standpoint of the person who's created the work.
Right.
So if they have created a song, let's take Coca-Cola's song, I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing, which is one of the most famous commercials ever. Very happy, very free spirit.
Will I get copyrighted for just singing that? No. I didn't sing the words. We're okay.
We're in private use here.
Okay, private use. Okay, good.
But if somebody took that song and then associated it with a mark or something that Coke did not want that to be associated with, you can see where that can create an issue. And yes. I'll give you another example in the political realm.
Oh, yes.
So there was years ago a political party and somebody who won an election, and they were using Bruce Springsteen's song, Born in the USA. Very much a rallying song, proud of America, those kinds of things. Bruce Springsteen called the politician and said, you are not authorized to use my song.
He hadn't asked.
He hadn't asked, and he was not authorized to it. So they had to stop. So you can also remember when President Clinton won his election, and they would always play Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow by Fleetwood Mac. Well, they got permission from Fleetwood Mac to do that.
So
that's why they could do it.
Okay.
But they couldn't just do it on their own. Now, one thing I want to make sure your listeners are also aware of is you have copyright issues, but also you have trademark issues.
Okay.
So there is a difference. Some things will have its own trademark. So Coca-Cola, for example, is a trademark.
Disney.
So Disney is very protective of Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
And how Mickey Mouse is used. They want to make sure that it is used the way they want it to be used. It represents a brand. It represents an image. The Magic Kingdom. Happy. They don't want it used with a war backdrop, for example.
Right.
So that is a trademark issue. Okay.
Okay.
So, and it's an important distinction, but one that we don't need to really get too worried about today, but I just want to make sure people understand that that is a distinction.
There's like the image of the brand, and then there's the protection of the written creative material.
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What are the consequences of breaking these laws?
Well, there are monetary damages. Those damages on the high end can reach $150,000.
You just wish you had bought the ass subscription at that point.
You know, under extreme, extreme circumstances, you could have criminal sanctions, but that's extreme. In addition, you can also, if the producer of the copyright or the owner of the copyright is able to show some actual damages, you know, a damage to his or her image, then they can also collect those as well.
Okay.
So, for example, take this to an extreme. Let's say I used a copyrighted work and I didn't do it with authorization and I used it in a manner that had a very negative connotation, whereas my song was meant to be very positive.
Mm-hmm.
So just create the most horrific scenario that you could associate. Let's say I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing, okay? And you're putting to the backdrop of that Nazi Germany.
Okay.
So you can see that's obviously a dichotomy. Well, if Coke then suffers damages because of that, nobody buys their product. Because, wait a minute, Coke is supporting Nazi Germany.
Right.
Okay. Then they can collect those damages for that improper use as well.
You used it improperly. Okay. Exactly. So there's financial damages and in very severe, crazy cases, listeners, don't be crazy.
Right.
Make smart decisions. I think we've talked about all the other big questions that were defining all of the words. Let me make sure everything is still recording. So we're still going. Perfect.
Good.
So I'd love to look at some individual questions and apply this knowledge that we've learned about the jargon and the kind of wherewithal.
Okay.
So if our post of a recording does not provide any profit, or if we choose to have a place where they could donate to our not-for-profit, this came from a children's choir director up in the New England area, what are our responsibilities to the publisher and the composer if we're streaming something that's technically free but still asking for profit?
So if somebody owns the work, the question is, can you stream that work as part of some kind of an educational experience mm-hmm. or something like that? And this is really where YouTube is beginning to mm-hmm. get into that gray area.
Okay.
So, because everybody is now uploading songs, putting them to their own videos,
mm-hmm.
and creating images, which are now, in some cases, being viewed by millions of people.
Right.
So, what could begin as something that is allowed under the law, whether it's public domain, whether it's fair use doctrine, whether you're getting into the educational exception, whether you're getting into the private use exception, you know.
Could you define, before we go into it, I'm sorry to interrupt, could you define the education exception and the private use exception?
Yeah, so private use is like, for example, I'm going to record my child as they play something on the piano.
Okay.
And then I'm going to upload that onto YouTube. And I'm going to use that as a GoFundMe page. Okay. So am I now using this song to raise money for an organization? Yeah. Does that violate the law? Probably.
Okay.
Because I'm using it now to raise money.
But if you wouldn't have used it for the GoFundMe.
If I wouldn't have raised it, then you're back on the safer side of that.
Okay.
So when you get into, or like a school production,
mm-hmm.
okay, I'm in a school hall and I'm singing an Arvo part, you know,
mm-hmm.
choral rendition. Arvo part is still alive. But that is generally okay in that arena of the school production.
Right.
Okay. Or in
like
your,
if they go Facebook Live with it or
right.
something like that.
Or if you're in your choir room, for example. Mm-hmm. But if you start to raise money from that, and it gets a little bit trickier, too, if you charge admission to that production. So if you've got a local symphony, for example, that is going to produce Carmina Burana,
mm-hmm.
well, you've got to have the rights to produce that because you're selling tickets, you know, and things like that. But generally, public performances that are just done publicly for free, if you will,
mm-hmm.
enjoy a protection under the law.
Of the private
of
or the education.
Right.
Okay.
But the minute you start to charge money for that, it gets you over that line as to whether or not now do you have to have a license. From
so the safe bet would be just to go ahead and get the
exactly,
license
right.
if you're going to use
right.
it in that way.
So that's why most people will inquire about that. But I've had another, and here's where YouTube has gotten more proactive. So a lot of people, because they are posting videos of themselves and maybe they've got Earth, Wind, and Fire, or maybe they've got the Beatles,
or
whoever, the Rolling Stones, YouTube will now take that down.
Okay.
Because they are starting to get what are called cease and desist letters from the people who own the rights to that music saying,
mm-hmm.
hey, this is an improper publication of my work. They do not have permission to do it. You must take it down.
Mm-hmm.
And because YouTube is the platform for that, they can be held liable.
So they take it down.
So they take it down. So
I think I had that happen once on Instagram. I think I posted something and it had a sound with it,
right.
and they picked up the sound
right.
as a song. Like just playing in the background.
Right, right. And that's what happens. So, again, are they required to do that? Maybe not, but they do it out of an abundance of caution because they don't want to be held liable. And they don't want to have a lawsuit filed
mm-hmm.
against them for being the enabler, if you will, of producing that song.
Right. And to cover the director who was asking, if she just requested the specific license
mm-hmm.
to then perform those pieces, if she chooses to request donations, she has a little bit more coverage.
A little bit more coverage, right.
Still a little bit hairy. So what? Where is the line with live streaming? Would you suggest the same thing? Get some type of licensor before you live stream something?
The best protection is to always have a license.
Okay.
As a general rule. If you don't have a license, then you want to fall within one of the exceptions.
Okay.
Whether it's the fair use or whether it's, you know, what we call the in-home exception.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hope that nobody's going to come after you for it.
I know that's what we did with our concert on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
I left it up for about a week on our Facebook page and on our Vimeo account.
Right.
And then I pulled it.
Right.
I still have it.
Right.
But it's not available to the public because I didn't want to break any of the... If I didn't want anything to potentially happen while we were figuring all the details out.
And again, the law has not quite caught up with the technology.
Okay.
So we're still dealing with a law that the last time it was changed was 1998.
So what I hear you saying is that there will be a follow-up to this episode with you and I sometime
in
the
next. I'm sure there will be. But, you know, it's a political issue, too.
Okay.
You have to balance the rights of the public versus the rights of the people who own the work. And the rights of the public now are so strong because of these platforms like Facebook, like YouTube, like Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Like TikTok.
TikTok. I mean, it's Twitter. There are new... modalities created literally overnight, and some fail, some don't. App development. I mean, who would have thought that everybody in America owns some form of an iPhone? I can tell you 15 years ago, you were happy if you just had a little Nokia phone.
Oh, yeah, I remember the old school little, I had the old school Razor at one point. I thought that was the coolest thing on campus.
Right.
But that thing you just said about personal rights versus the rights of the person who's copyrighted, that leads to one of these questions, too. Are there rules? Let's say I buy X amount of octavos of scores, but my young singers that are just learning to read look at it, and there's stabs and there's piano parts, and sometimes it's helpful to just pull that one part off the score. Is that legal?
Technically, no.
Really?
Right.
I'm sorry in advance. I've only done that a few times. Not
now, does it happen? I'm sure it does.
Why is it not legal?
Because the person who owns that music has not given you the right to do that unless they have through a license.
Okay, so if I wanted to, I could purchase this music and then go back to the publisher and say, I've purchased X amount of scores, my kids are struggling, would you be okay with me for this period of time?
Or maybe through the purchase of that music, it's embedded in that purchase that you're allowed to do that. So sometimes scores will say on an inside cover, you know, you can either reproduce this or not, but a lot of them say this may not be reproduced in whole or in part.
Okay, that's why they say that. Left that part out. It needs to say in whole or in part.
Right, right.
That would make sense if it was on all
right.
y'all publishers. It needs to say in whole or in part so I can better understand.
Right,
okay,
right.
So one of my friends asked this question when I posed, what are your copyright questions? So I will make sure that she knows, do not create your own single part scores.
Right.
That's not legal unless you have the license. So,
well, and let me back up.
No,
so,
go ahead.
Think about Stairway to Heaven. Same issue.
Right.
It wasn't the whole song. It was
opening.
The opening chords that this gentleman who wrote this song called Taurus said Robert Plant and Jimmy Page co-opted those notes. Now, of course, the argument was, well, those notes were generic notes.
That chord progression is so...
Right. It was very. In fact, there was an interesting quote that. So what the expert testified to was that the similarities claimed by the original author of those notes either involved unprotectable common musical elements or they were random. That was the argument that they used, and the court agreed.
I mean, there's a lot of quote. You think of the beginning of that song as,
right.
It sounds like Little Ditty of Jack and Diane, but it's not.
Or think about Beethoven. Da, 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 da.
Right.
Or when Keith Richards opens up with Start Me Up, three notes. But you hear those notes, you know exactly what that song is.
The thing that, I took a film score class, and we talked about the copyright issues, especially after Space Odyssey.
Right.
And there was one other one, but I don't want to ruin it for anyone, so I'm not going to talk about it. But we spent a day talking about copyright, and I'm not going to lie, I was more confused after that discussion than before.
Right.
Because sometimes it was okay and sometimes it wasn't.
Right.
And that I think that's where a lot of my choir friends are lying and
I think what the reason that it's confusing is there is such a proliferation of an availability of copyrightable material. And everybody uses it, and a lot of people don't follow the law. And they're never charged with anything, so they just assume it's okay.
Right.
But when you, and that may be fine if you're sort of flying under the radar, whether it's a school production or, you know, something. Because the person who owns the copyright has to be the one who protects it. So the law requires that they protect the work. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I own something, how am I going to know if somebody in Seattle, Washington is producing it or raising money on GoFundMe or whatever?
Right.
Then I have to write a cease and desist letter. And what if they don't comply? Am I going to hire a lawyer? No. I mean, so there's a reality to that. So that's why a lot of this is a little confusing because you don't see a lot of enforcement until you get to something like Stairway to Heaven, which is a monster song.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And what the gentleman who wrote the song Taurus said was, you took my song, my opening notes, therefore you owe me money. Okay.
So it was a big enough thing that there became lawyers and all of those things.
So a lot of people who don't think in terms of what I call the long view.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are people who are very astute about buying up all the works as early as they can or protecting everything that they do just in case.
Oh, yes.
So you can register a copyright, for example.
Huh.
If you want to, you don't have to, but you can register it with the U.S. Copyright Office.
Okay.
So that's another form of protection. But, you know, you think about every new artist out there. They hope that they'll be successful. They hope that they will be on the same stage as the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Or Beyonce.
Whoever your person is. Hey, remember the big hit last summer, Old Town Road?
Mm-hmm.
I was doing a research study on that, trying to break down all the elements that we heard from the 1990s to today and how it was in that one song. Anyway, I found out that the beat that made that song was something that the person who wrote the song just yanked off of SoundCloud or something. He didn't have to pay for it. It was under, quote-unquote, free beats.
Wow.
And then the guy who wrote it was over in a different country, heard his beat because he had his own signature inside the beat, heard his beat because a friend said, hey, I think I just heard your signature. They are now friends and collaborating because the song obviously made them both quite famous.
Right.
There were no legal actions.
Right.
But to think that something that was the number one hit of an entire year was made off of yanking, I mean, he never gave credit to that beat until they became friends. And
well, and I'll give you another example too. So there's a very famous drummer for James Brown. His name is Clyde Stubblefield.
Okay.
And during a performance back in the late 60s, he had a beat, and it was called the Funky Drummer Beat.
Okay.
And he just created it. Now, later on, he said he got that beat because he lived next to a factory, and that was the beat of the factory that he heard, the smokestacks.
Right.
And if you can Google it and YouTube it, and it's fascinating, but that beat was replicated all across rock and roll music, jazz music, and Clyde never got any money for that whatsoever. But he created this beat.
He didn't copyright it?
Didn't copyright it. And so again, if you want to be hyper proactive, then you copyright everything that you do. Now again, some people, it's big steps. Everything means everything. And if you want to be protected, then that's what you do. I know certain people who are music producers who buy up music catalogs for that very reason. Because out of the 100,000 songs that they may buy, there may just be one that's a hit, but it'll be a big hit.
And they'll make a ton of money.
It's the whole reason Michael Jackson's estate now is as wealthy as it is, because he bought a lot of the rights to the Beatles music. He owns those catalogs,
not all of them. I'm going to start investing in songs.
But because of that, that dictates whether Paul McCartney, what songs he plays and doesn't play in a concert.
Really?
Because if he plays a song, even though he wrote it, that is owned by Michael Jackson's estate, he has to pay Michael Jackson's estate money
to perform his own
perform
music.
That song. That's right.
I think the same is true, I think, for composers who give their music to a publisher to be published.
Right.
There's a big slew of composers
right.
that are now self-published
right.
because they have a little bit more control over
right.
it. Okay, so to recap, we've defined a lot of things, but the big point here is before you do anything, make sure you've done your research.
Right.
And that could be talking to a publisher, that could be acquiring ASCAP or BMI or
right.
CCLI.
Right.
And going through those or using something that's available, such as public domain,
right.
which I now know the formula for, which
right.
is so fancy. I really appreciate all your time.
Well, thank you.
I know that you have a million things to say, and I love talking to you. So I always give my guests at the end a chance to share something that matters, a nugget, a word of wisdom, a thought. You can say anything you want, but I want guide or prompt.
I think the most important thing is, in spite of whatever situation, economic, personal, or whatever, music matters. And it really speaks to the soul of people.
Mm-hmm.
Be creative. Inspire the students. I was, and my wife, we were both very adamant that our son would be exposed to music. He was very involved in his choir. As a result of that, he developed a liking to opera. He enjoyed listening and can distinguish good voices from bad voices.
Okay.
But there's just a lot of great music out there, whether it's musical theater, whether it's the chorus experience. The only reason I know who Arvo Pärt is because my son happened to sing some of his music.
Mm-hmm.
There's great choral traditions, you know, in Estonia, for example.
Yes, I love Estonian music.
The singing revolution. There's a national pride in a lot of songs that are sung. You know, Edelweiss
mm-hmm.
is another example. So I just encourage people like yourself and people in this business, you really are inspirational, and it's vital that you keep the energy and you keep it alive, because if you don't, nobody will, and it dies. And that would be the true tragedy.
It's not going to die on my watch. I'm so
great.
Thankful that you helped educate us on the copyright.
Well,
this has been great. Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure.
There you have it, my friends. Some copyright definitions, some answers to some questions, and a little bit of inspiration there at the end. I know that we are all in this together, and that the questions and the things we learn as we explore more about copyright and what it means to be virtual are going to change. But we're here and we're in this together. So I'm excited to see what happens. Just in case you were wondering, a couple things that my choir will be doing in the fall to help with copyright issues. We're going to attempt to buy all of our music in digital form. We have drafted a letter to the different publishers that we'll need to send once we decide exactly what we're doing. And I have Mills on standby, eager and ready to do another episode if anything else develops. So thank you so much for listening. I'm really excited to share this platform with you, and it's an honor to call you friend. Remember, whatever you're doing today, that matters. You matter, and this is Music Matters. I'll see you next time.